Hello, this is Atah Durakan with the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, August 18th, 2020, coming to you from my home studio. We start on the front page with Together Decatur, a unique year. New conductor for Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra. This article is by Donette Beckett from Decatur. The Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra's 2020 season will be different than it has been in the past. Because of the coronavirus restrictions, those wanting to enjoy the performances will have to do so virtually. And those who tune in will notice a new conductor, William McLean. "It's a unique year," McLean said. "I'm very excited about starting with a new orchestra." Concertgoers will be able to see performances streamed live on various websites, including the Millikan University YouTube page, the Symphony Orchestra Guild of Decatur website, and the MDSO Facebook page. The first concert will be available for viewing at 7:30 p.m. Saturday, September 26th. McLean has 20 years of experience working with professional, community, and youth orchestras, but the MDSO is the biggest. Before arriving in Decatur, he was an assistant professor at Georgia College and State University in Milledgeville, Georgia, as well as a conductor and performer for several symphonies throughout the country. Symphony Orchestra Guild President Peggy Ruff understands the orchestra will have a challenging season, but I think it's going to be a fantastic season, she said. Dr. McLean is approaching this with such enthusiasm and determination to make this a wonderful season. Ruff met McLean in January during the interview process and witnessed the conductor's enthusiasm for programs and community outreach opportunities. "He's going to be great for Decatur," Ruff said. "He's going to present a lot of interesting concepts that we haven't had the benefit of hearing before." McLean also will be serving as an instructor and a conductor at Millikan University. McLean will be replacing Sergei Bogza, who had conducted the MDSO since 2016. According to Ruff, the local orchestra is unique, with a mix of professional musicians, college students, and faculty. "We really have a hybrid ensemble," she said. "The students gain the benefit of being on the same performance stage with the faculty and also paid musicians. The conductor is looking on the bright side of a challenging first year. The good news is that a lot of great minds and great organizations are all working on this issue to provide the best procedures and policies to move forward," McLean said. "We do believe we can move forward and that the arts can still remain a strong, relevant part of our lives. Another difference viewers will notice is the smaller size of the local orchestra. About 40 members will be part of each performance, nearly half of past MDSO orchestras. This is to stay in line with the current health guidelines." "But the music will still be great," McLean said. "It will still be exciting." According to McLean, the orchestra will be reminiscent of orchestras in the late 1800s. "They were much smaller," he said, noting composers such as Franz Schubert, Wolfgang Mozart, and Ludwig van Beethoven created pieces for smaller ensembles. String orchestra music will also be added as a feature to this year's season. "With a larger orchestra, woodwinds and percussion pieces are often highlighted during a performance. The future for audiences to join them is unknown at this time. A live outdoor event may be the orchestra's first attempt." McLean's experiences include teaching and performing. He also is not new to providing performances on social media and websites. "This is the first time I've done something at this scale," he said, "but this is going to be a first for most groups. We're all sort of in this together, which is comforting. There are many great minds who are working on this problem. McLean has been communicating with Millikan University and the Symphony Orchestra Guild to produce the performances in the new way. It's a group effort to get something out that we can all be proud of and stay connected with each other, he said. And there is a photo here taken from behind the conductor from 2015 showing the Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra at their 2015 performance, and it looks like it is outdoors. Okay, and the main photo here, William McLean, the new conductor of the Millikan Decatur Symphony Orchestra, is preparing for a unique first season that will include virtual performances to start the 2020 season. And the next article, More Than Less, amid Buffett donation, Council deals with budget realities. This article's by Tony Reed from Decatur. Monday evening's Decatur City Council meeting was a tale of two cities. On the one hand, moving ahead with bold neighborhood revitalization, and on the other, grappling with a projected budget deficit of more than $5 million. Council members unanimously backed a resolution to approve an agreement with the Howard G. Buffett Foundation, which commits the foundation to spend $8 million on curb and gutter reconstruction, sidewalk upgrades, and alley paving in the Johns Hill neighborhood. The 24-block area bounded by Martin Luther King Jr. Drive, Eastwood, East Cantrell, and South Jasper Streets is already in receipt of a $1.2 million commitment by the foundation to demolish abandoned homes and generally tidy up the area. And further plans envision building moderate-income housing and perhaps rehabilitation of existing properties. Monday's council meeting also unanimously approved spending $1.2 million of taxpayer money to replace outdated lead and galvanized water lines in the neighborhood to prepare the way for the foundation's improvement work. Looking at the overall huge effort to revitalize the area, Councilman David Horn said, "I think this is going to be a transformative project for the Johns Hill neighborhood." Councilman Chuck Cooley described the partnership between the city and the foundation and the neighborhood as a win-win-win, and Mayor Julie Moore Wolf said it was empowering the city to achieve something it could not hope to afford on its own. And those dwindling city coffers also showed up on Monday's agenda. A financial report from the city treasurer outlined the drain on municipal finances imposed by the loss of tax and other revenues linked primarily to the COVID-19 pandemic. Income is lagging budget projections, and those projections are now warning of a deficit of $5 million and climbing. City Manager Scott Wrighton, in a previous budget briefing document, projected things are likely to get worse before they get better, as most economic forecasters say 2021 revenues will be down on 2020 levels. This means that the City of Decatur's $5 million plus 2020 general fund revenue shortfall will be substantially greater in 2021, Wrighton said in the document. In commenting before Monday's meeting, Deputy City Manager John Kidseth said the city will have to draw on cash reserves to cover the shortfall and get through this financial year. Obviously, you can't sustain that long term, so there's going to have to be a tightening of the belt in 2021, he added. The nature of further cuts has yet to be worked out, but Kenseth said the city was already undertaking what remedial action it could by not filling certain jobs and cutting other expenses. General fund outlays are currently $4.5 million below what the city's budget had predicted they would be, for example. So we are offsetting some of our revenue losses with reductions in expenditures, Kinseth added, and we will need to be more creative next year to try to make our expenditures not exceed our revenues. In other business, the council narrowly approved amending city code to allow for planting and maintenance of native plants and landscapes in yards and lots. The city also signed off on the demolition of a building at 1200 East Cantrell Street, which was damaged when it was hit by a car in July. The property once housed a 1930s dance hall. There's a photo here of Decatur City Manager Scott Wrighton with a view of the background. Looks like military memorials from his office or building window. So Decatur City Manager Scott Wrighton, annual salary $185,000, city population 71,290 in 2018, and start date March 2019. Okay, let's see what we have. Local and state, page A3. A smooth, unique opening. Schools kick off virtual learning, adjust to remote classes. This article's by Garrett Karsten from Decatur. It was like no other first day of class, but the superintendent of Decatur Public Schools said that Monday's kickoff of virtual learning went mostly smooth. Paul Friegel said the day consisted of teachers relaying expectations regarding attendance, participation, and homework. The transition from in-person to online learning meant finding new ways to track student progress and behavior, and faculty intends to learn as the year goes on. We'll be able to tell when people log into the Google Meets platform, Friegel said. They'll also have assignments and other things they need to do to show they understand the content. Staff will reach out to students struggling with classroom engagement or attendance in an all-hands-on-deck approach, he said. We'll have not just teachers, but teaching assistants, possibly security and secretaries, calling and reaching out to these families to try and find out what the struggle is so we can make sure they are engaged, Frigu said. Issues on the first day included parents having trouble logging their student into the online classrooms and a lot of questions regarding virtual learning during the beginning of the day, most of which were resolved through the day, Frigo said. The district in July announced plans to have remote learning of at least for the first quarter because of COVID-19 concerns. Schools stopped in-person instruction in March because of the pandemic. Some districts like Argenta, Orianna, and Warrensburg-Latham have changed from in-person to remote learning as COVID cases have increased. Aaron Hinton's 6-year-old son, Callan, started at Montessori Academy for Peace in Decatur. We really didn't have a lot of information going in, and so a lot of parents thought if this was going to be a nightmare like the spring was, Hinton said. It wasn't until last week that we got a bit more information, but even then, it wasn't much than what we already knew, which was that the classes would be all virtual and that attendance was mandatory. The number of total registered students is expected to grow and is roughly 75% of the anticipated enrollment for the 2020-21 school year. Total enrollment grew to 5,493, counted on Monday, August 10th. Friegel said the delivery service is expected to be a 3-day process, accounting for time needed to prepare meals for several thousand students each week, and adjustments may be made over time as operations are monitored. Teen dead, 3 hurt in shootings. Garrett Karsten, Decatur. Police say multiple Monday morning shootings left an 18-year-old male dead and 3 people injured. Decatur Police Sergeant Chris Copeland said the teen, who was found shot with life-threatening injuries inside a vehicle around 9:20 a.m. in the 1300 block of East Walnut Street, was later pronounced dead at a local hospital. Police say 2 other individuals shot near Martin Luther King Jr. Street and Grant Avenue and Martin Luther King Jr. Drive and Garfield Avenue, Copeland said. Police say they were sent to Decatur Memorial Hospital with non-life-threatening injuries and were not cooperating with the police investigation. Macon County Coroner Michael Day said the victim's identity is being withheld, pending notification of family. He indicated the cause of death was gunshot trauma and that an autopsy would be conducted Tuesday. Police say large and unruly crowds formed near East Walnut and outside DMH, and fights breaking out required law enforcement to break them up. Copeland says a Decatur police detective saw a small gold vehicle shooting at another vehicle around 10:31 a.m. in the area of Jasper and Wood Streets that was last seen fleeing around 90 miles an hour near 18th and Clay Streets. This incident resulted in a female victim sustaining non-life-threatening gunshot to the leg and was treated at DMH. Among the incidents, police received additional calls reporting shots fired near 20th Street and Prairie Avenue involving subjects in two dark-colored vehicles shooting at each other, Copeland said in a statement. Anyone with information can call Crime Stoppers at 217-423-8477 or the Decatur Police Department Detective Bureau at 217-424-2734. DeWitt County, place-based changes, Clinton Park to get facelift, eventual full restoration, Kevin Barlow, Clinton. The large playground in a Clinton Park will be renovated and eventually rebuilt, said Public Health and Safety Commissioner Danny Ballinger. The ultimate play space was built in Kiwanis Park on Clinton's east side in October 2003 after a two-year $83,000 fundraising campaign. Officials estimated about 1,000 people helped with the effort, which included a week-long community build after the materials arrived. But earlier this month, Ballinger was made aware that it was becoming unsafe after a parent complained that her child fell and was injured. I went down to take a look at it and found rotten posts and stuff that was dilapidated, Ballinger said. It made me wonder that if this stuff was bad, how much other stuff in the ground was bad as well. Ballinger told the council the playground should be demolished and the city should consider other options. But after that, I heard from a lot of people who said they wanted to save it, he added. Ballinger did as well, and when the Clinton Area Chamber of Commerce said $2,300 remained in a fund dedicated to the ultimate play space, Ballinger said those funds could be used for materials that would save the park for about 4 to 5 years. During that time, he added, officials could make plans for a full-scale restoration. Marion Brissard, the director of the chamber, was among those hoping to save the park and was one of the volunteers that helped make the park a reality 17 years ago. The chamber was initially in charge of the funds in 2003, but we have held some smaller fundraisers, such as duck derbies, and so we had a little bit of money for a situation like this, she said. Ballinger said that he has gone to the site, removed some trees, and made some repairs. City employees have also worked on the city-owned park, and members of the Clinton Fire Department have also assisted. There may be opportunities for local volunteers in the future. Brissard said she believes that if asked, community members will once again help out, just as they did when the park was built. It truly was a community effort, she said. There were families out there. They were painting, helping with the construction. It was something special. So much heart and soul goes into a project like this. Ballinger said he doesn't have any idea how much money is needed for a full restoration project, but he said he believes the time has come for a park district to help fund the parks in Clinton. Creation of a park district would require a public referendum. I have 6 city parks, and I don't have a budget for that. And when you have to split the money up between 6 of them, it doesn't go very far, he said. Everyone wants nice parks, and this is their opportunity to step up and help us. We should give everyone an opportunity to either vote for it or vote it down. Mother of dead son okayed for trial, Tony Reed, Decatur. The mother of a son who was shot to death in Decatur will be allowed to sit in on the trial of the man pleading not guilty to killing him, a judge ruled Monday. Dante L. Wade, 46, is facing three alternative counts of first-degree murder in the death of 25-year-old Marquis Afalone on November 9, 2018. Jury selection in Macon County Circuit Court began Monday morning, and the trial is expected to last several days. Judge Thomas Griffith granted a motion by First Assistant Macon County State's Attorney Nicole Kroenke to allow Afalone's mother, who will also be a character witness, to stay in court for the whole trial. Witnesses are usually excluded from observing trial proceedings. Defense attorney Caleb Brown objected, but Griffith said allowing the mother to stay would not create problems. It sounds like her testimony is obviously substantive, but it's not a major portion of the state's case, he added. The judge also allowed a defense motion that bars witnesses from referring to Wade's criminal history or previous incarcerations. Prosecution evidence described Afalone as the boyfriend of Wade's daughter, Jasmine Wade, now 22. The boyfriend and girlfriend had gotten into an argument the day before the murder, in which Afalone had taken her keys after she had seized his cell phone, and both refused to give the items back. Her fingers had been injured when the confrontation turned physical. Expect more traffic near Milliken as students return. Donette Beckett, Decatur. Move-in day for first-year Milliken University students will be on Friday. Foot and vehicle traffic will increase with students returning to campus. New Student Welcome Week 2020 will take place August 21st through 23rd. Returning students will be moving in both on and off campus throughout the week. Classes at Milliken will begin August 24th. The university's Office of Public Safety will be stepping up vehicle and pedestrian enforcement in the area, focusing on speeding, crosswalks, and distracted driving. For more information about New Student Welcome Week, visit milliken.edu/welcomeweek or contact the Milliken Office of Campus Life at campuslife@milliken.edu or 217-424-6335. We move on to local page A5. Niederman crowned Miss Illinois Fair Pageant Queen. This article is by Donette Beckett, Decatur. Jalen Niederman was crowned Miss Illinois Fair Pageant Queen during Saturday's competition at the Decatur Club. Niederman, 18, is from La Harpe. She was one of nine young women vying for the crown. The pageant also included a Junior Miss Preteen and Princess competition. Judges announced the winners to a smaller audience due to the coronavirus restrictions. The competition was also available for viewing on the pageant website. Director Melissa Muirhead said she was determined to make one of the state's only pageants work for the girls. "It's pretty different than previous years," she said. Guidelines from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention were carried out, such as face coverings and social distancing. Winners were, well, the queen we already mentioned, Jalen Niederman, first runner-up in Miss Congeniality, Sydney Daniel. Second runner-up, Belle Plue, Junior Miss Morgan Binder. First runner-up in Miss Congeniality, Presley Lamb. Second runner-up, Delaney Epley. Preteen, Alyssa Thompson. First runner-up, Jolie Duquen. Second runner-up, Olivia Kent. Miss Congeniality, Lily Walster. Side awards, Best Smile, Amelia Bundy. Best Hair, Gretchen Weber. Best Eyes, Elena Doan. Personality award, Emerson Jones. Photogenic, Gretchen Weber. And finally, sold most raffle tickets, Elena Doan. Okay. We have just a short time here, so we'll return to the front page. And Postal Service controversy. Postmaster to testify before House. Individuals sue Trump, USPS, Postmaster General. This article is by Matthew Daly and Lisa Mascaro from the Associated Press, Washington. Facing a public backlash over mail disruptions, the Trump administration scrambled to respond Monday as the House prepared an emergency vote to halt delivery delays and service changes that Democrats warned could imperil the November election. The Postal Service said it has stopped removing mailboxes and mail sorting machines amid an outcry from lawmakers. President Donald Trump flatly denied he was asking for the mail to be delayed, even as he leveled fresh criticism on universal ballots and mail-in voting. "Wouldn't do that," Trump told reporters Monday at the White House. "I have encouraged everybody, speed up the mail, not slow the mail." Meanwhile, several individuals, including candidates for public office, sued President Donald Trump, the U.S. Postal Service, and its new Postmaster General in New York on Monday to ensure adequate funding for postal operations. The lawsuit was filed in Manhattan federal court as lawsuits were threatened across the country as a response to comments the president recently made and actions taken by newly appointed Postmaster General Louis DeJoy to change operations at post offices nationwide. The lawsuit alleges that Trump and DeJoy are trying to ensure the Postal Service cannot reliably deliver election mail. The lawsuit seeks a court order to force adequate funding of the Postal Service prior to November's election. DeJoy will testify next Monday before Congress, along with the chairman of the Postal Service Board of Governors. Democrats and some Republicans say actions by the new Postmaster General, a Trump ally and a major Republican donor, endangered millions of Americans who rely on the post office to obtain prescription drugs and other needs, including an expected surge in mail-in voting this fall. Speaker Nancy Pelosi called the House back into session over the crisis at the Postal Service, setting up a political showdown amid concerns that the Trump White House is trying to undermine the agency ahead of the election. Pelosi cut short lawmakers' summer recess with a vote expected Saturday on legislation that would prohibit changes at the agency. The package will also include $25 billion to shore up the Postal Service, which faces continued financial losses. The Postal Service is among the nation's oldest and more popular institutions, strained in recent years by declines in first-class and business mail, but now hit with new challenges during the coronavirus pandemic. Trump routinely criticizes its business model, but the financial outlook is far more complex and includes an unusual requirement to pre-fund retiree health benefits that advocates in Congress want to undo. That has brought us to the end of the first half hour. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review for Tuesday, August 18th, 2020. Be right back.